CHMA attended a panel titled The Far Right in New Brunswick, a panel on extremism and exclusion, hosted by the NB Media Co-op and Société de l'Acadie de Nouveau-Brunswick. With that in mind, please be advised that the following story is going to discuss themes of racism, xenophobia, Nazism, violence, including specific violent incidents that occurred in Atlantic provinces in the past 20 years, and other themes of exclusion. Brim Toffamuk, a master's student in sociology at the University of New Brunswick, presented her research on the growing presence of far-right extremism in Atlantic Canada. Her findings indicate that since 2016, the same year that former U.S. President Donald Trump was elected, far-right activity has dramatically increased both in Atlantic Canada and around the world. After Toffamuk examined incidents of extremism that took place in Atlantic Canada over the past 20 years, she found that around 65% of all of those incidents took place after 2016. Not only that, but the incidents are continuing to increase at an alarmingly high rate.
I think it's really important to understand kind of the context of right-wing extremism currently in Canada as well as globally. And really what researchers have found lately is that an increase in right-wing extremism, particularly post-2016, and kind of a shifting climate of right-wing extremism. Really, this is something that researchers don't yet fully understand why it's happening. It's something that needs to be researched further. It's really a complex kind of socio-political environment. But one of the things that we're seeing kind of concurrently with this rise in right-wing extremism is a growing normalization of hate. And we're seeing that in the United States with Donald Trump and a vilification of Islam, ban on Muslim immigrants, an attempt to build a wall to keep out Mexicans, and his he refused to condemn white supremacy as well. But this is also something that we've seen in Canada over recent years with Prime Minister Harper viewing Islamicization as the greatest threat to Canada, as well as with Kelly Leach attempting to screen for Canadian values from immigrants before they would be allowed into Canada. And this has also become a growing issue globally with far-right populist and nationalistic politicians being elected kind of worldwide. So it's not just a Canadian or Atlantic Canadian or United States problem, but really we're seeing kind of a global acceptance of hate.
Toffamuk's research indicates that the types of far-right activity, as well as the frequency, are important to examine. Rallies, gatherings, and recruitment activities have spiked in both New Brunswick and Nova Scotia since 2016. New Brunswick has nearly 200,000 less people than Nova Scotia, but it is not far behind when it comes to the rate of recent far-right activity. Research reveals that Nova Scotia leads the Atlantic provinces with 74 incidents of far-right activity or incidents over the course of a 20-year period, but New Brunswick is close behind with 64 incidents. New Brunswick actually has a higher rate of far-right group meetings and protests compared to Nova Scotia, despite its lower population. Toffamuk presented a graph comparing the types of far-right activity, which is available for viewing on chmafm.com, and is referring to different colored lines on the graph in the following clip.
The takeaway from this is the types of incidents that have been increasing over past years that we're interested in. The first being in yellow here, protests and rallies. We've seen a large increase in those happening in Atlantic Canada. And then specifically, we found that these fall along kind of four themes, these protests and rallies, being anti-immigration, anti-globalization, anti-Indigenous, as well as anti-government focused specifically on or mostly on Justin Trudeau. And then we also saw a large increase in the brown here in group meetings and group formations over the past years, as well as smaller increases in property crimes and harassment and hate speech. When we looked at the incidents across the provinces, Nova Scotia had the most with 74, but this was really followed closely by New Brunswick with 64, which we thought was an interesting finding given that New Brunswick has a smaller population than Nova Scotia and that New Brunswick urban centers are less populous than most of Nova Scotia's urban centers. So for there to be a difference of only 10 incidents here, we thought was an interesting trend. And following that through a comparison of New Brunswick to Nova Scotia to this graph, we see that New Brunswick actually had more group meetings than Nova Scotia, as well as more protests than Nova Scotia over the 20-year period that we were looking, and they were very, New Brunswick and Nova Scotia were very similar in terms of property crimes as well. And this one, we can also see that property crimes were the most frequent or most common type of incident that we found, with 45 in total. So that's about 30% of all incidents were property crimes. And mostly the property crimes that we were seeing were vandalism that was meant to intimidate a targeted group. So something like spray painting hate symbols. We saw that on a lot of churches, as well as on a few kind of election signs, was what we were seeing broadly for property crime. Right-wing extremism over the past years in New Brunswick has been remarkably nonviolent. It was only about 11% of our incidents that we located were violent incidents. And these were mostly just violent incidents against a minority group or an individual minority, kind of out of personal grievances or right-wing ideologies. But there were two mass casualty events in the 20-year period, the first being Justin Bourque, and the second being a plot to commit a mass shooting in a mall in Nova Scotia, which was thankfully thwarted before it could happen. And both of these mass casualty events took place or would have taken place had it occurred before the before the 2016 boom. So that one was in 2014 and one was, again, earlier than 2016, which suggests that right-wing extremists right now could be more focused on efforts to sway others to their cause or engaging in intimidation and harassment or in organized demonstrations than in planning and committing violence.
Trafamuck is looking into the rate of extremist activity based on language communities in New Brunswick because it appears that Anglophone communities have a higher rate of far-right activity.
And so what we found was that right-wing extremism was predominantly taking place in English areas. More than 85% was in English areas, with a smaller amount in mixed areas, and only one of the incidents that we located in French areas. Really, to fully understand why we're seeing this, we would need to do more research and look more into it. We can speculate that maybe it has something to do with cultural differences between French and English areas, potentially that there's a stronger group identification among French Canadians. But it could also be that the English areas of their study are the more urban areas, so we're seeing an urban effect, or that of all the provinces, New Brunswick is the only bilingual province, so that could also play a role in why we see this trend in our results.
Shayna Perry is also a master's student of sociology at UNB and finds that her research indicates a troubling link between far-right extremism and the Canadian military. There is unquestionably an overlap of far-right extremists and members of the Canadian military, but the extent of the far-right involvement is still being investigated on a national level. Perry says what has already been uncovered is enough to cause concern for domestic and international security.
In a 2018 report, the Canadian Military Police Criminal Intelligence Section identified 16 military members of extreme hate groups and 35 others engaged in racist or hateful behavior. These numbers are likely higher as extremist and extremist groups are known to go to great lengths to keep their associations with extremism hidden. And this is a common tactic used by extremists to hide their extremist identities and affiliations from others. So kind of to just contextualize the issue, I'll give a couple quick examples of right-wing extremism in the Canadian Armed Forces. So one right-wing extremist group, LMIT, was founded by two former Canadian Armed Forces personnel. Another group, the Three Percenters, is known to have members who are active and former military and law enforcement personnel. The Three Percenters in particular are one of the more dangerous right-wing extremist groups in Canada because of their paramilitary training. And in fact, recent news reported that Canadian Armed Forces Rangers, or some Canadian Armed Forces Rangers, are supporters and or members of far-right groups like the Three Percenters. And actually now, the 4th Canadian Ranger Group Patrol, or the 4th Canadian Patrol Group, sorry, in particular, is under investigation by the Department of National Defense for said accusations. So top Canadian Armed Forces officials do admit to extremism in their ranks, and after increasing demand by the public and government, are taking action to develop a definition for hateful conduct that will help Armed Forces membership to better understand, identify, respond to, and report extremist actions and behaviors.
Perry found there to be a number of shared values between the Canadian military and members of far-right extremist groups, including hypermasculinity. These values may appeal to those in far-right groups who may join the military to gain combat and weapons expertise.
Certain right-wing extremists and extremist groups are drawn to the Canadian Armed Forces because both the military and the right-wing extremist culture share common elements such as hypermasculinity, authoritarianism or a rigid hierarchy, and a need for brotherhood. And research demonstrates that it is this hyper-masculinity of both the military and the right-wing extremist groups that link the two. So here you have masculinity paired with militancy to draw in a crowd of young, usually white men. The movement is especially appealing to those armchair or weekend warriors who enjoy violence-themed recreational activities like paintball, watching war movies and gun shows, or reading magazines such as The Soldier of Fortune. So on the one hand, you have right-wing extremist groups who fill a need for those military recruits who are looking for a community or a group to belong to that shares similar characteristics to the military. And on the other hand, you have these military recruits bringing in their skills and credibility to the extremist group. And these right-wing extremist groups who purposely recruit military and law enforcement personnel do so for those recruits' weapons and explosives training, leadership skills, discipline, and their access to weapons, equipment, and sensitive information. These skills and resources have the potential to increase the group's lethality and credibility within the right-wing extremist movement. More often than not, recruitment occurs on websites and social networking sites such as Facebook, Gab, and YouTube, where members often use aliases. For example, the three presenters have used social media to promote their cause to potential recruits. And some of these posts speak to youth and veterans, making reference to standing guard with our troops to protect Canadian heritage.
Far-right extremist groups actively look to recruit members or ex-members of the military and police for their training and credibility. The Proud Boys, a far-right extremist group recently added to Canada's list of terrorist organizations, are an example of the intersection of the military and the far-right. Perry says that the presence of far-right extremists in the military is a threat to public safety and is still being uncovered.
Right-wing extremism is an issue in the Canadian Armed Forces, and if not dealt with, can pose a serious threat to Canadian public safety. If these extremist groups continue to radicalize and recruit members of the armed forces, there is a risk that these military recruits will disseminate their military training and knowledge to these groups and increase the group's credibility and lethality. The link between right-wing extremism and the Canadian Armed Forces is a complicated and nuanced issue that will take years to overcome. However, the armed forces are taking the correct steps toward combating the issue with their hateful conduct policy. They are working with experts in the field of extremism to promote long-lasting institutional change. This research was also funded by the Minds Network for Research on Hateful Conduct and Right-Wing Extremism in the Canadian Armed Forces. This collaboration proves that this is a real issue and that needs to be addressed from multiple perspectives in order to effectively combat it.
Associate Professor of Sociology at UNB David Hoffman says he is often asked what can be done about this growing presence of right extremism. The answer to that question, he says, is still being developed.
I'm asked very often by media and colleagues and other people interested in right-wing extremism, what's the best way to deal with this type of problem? We have this problem. We're beginning to acknowledge this problem. We're late to the game, to be honest. I saw a great comment back there. That's absolutely right. The Canadian government only recently started funding research on right-wing extremism. We are late to the game. But what can we do as Canadians to confront this type of hate, these types of groups that again, as I mentioned, are a threat to our very the Canadian way of life? My answer is generally the same. It takes grassroots organizations, people like you, people who are interested and people who take the time to inform themselves, to engage in dialogue, to stand up and confront these types of groups, these types of ideologies in a peaceful way.
We only have half an hour today, so much of the conference has gone uncovered so far, but the entire panel is available for viewing on NB Media Co-op's Facebook page. There will also be an episode of CHMA Talks coming up next Thursday at 6 p.m., where we can explore the panel in more detail.